Okay, the committee should get started on hearing the request before us. I know there's not too many members here, but other members need to be in other committees. So if we can start with House File 2900, Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. House File 2900 deals with Hennepin County Government Center, and I'm going to make a few comments, and as you know, I did mention to the chair that the transportation bill is up in Ways and Means, so after I make a few introductory comments, I'll have to go downstairs for that bill. But I want to assure the county and the committee members present that it's not due to a lack of interest in the bill, because it's a very important one. Mr. Chairman, what we're requesting with House File 2900 is $28 million to build an outpatient clinic and health education facility at Hennepin County Medical Center that includes teaching clinics and an education center. And HCMC is well known for its role as a safety net provider of health care and as a provider of emergency medical services, but it is also an educational mission. HCMC is one of the largest training sites of health professionals in the state. And to give you a little feel about the statewide importance of HCMC, about 280 full-time equivalent physician residents per year go to HCMC, and that's about 45% of the state's total. 900 nursing students at any given time at HCMC, and it provides EMS education for about 2,700 individuals from all over the state in the past year, in the year 2006. Of each graduating class of physician residents, more than 50% stay in Minnesota to practice and do so in all parts of the state. In order to continue to serve its patient populations and to continue to train Minnesota's doctors and nurses, HCMC needs additional clinical and educational space. For that reason, HCMC is proposing a $175 million expansion, of which it's asking the state to provide $28 million for the training facility portions of that expansion. So the entire project will leverage $146 million in non-state resources. With me today is Dr. Michael Blazer, and he will do an overview of the request and take any questions. And then at this point, I'll excuse myself to go downstairs, but thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
But I may be back, depending on how the transportation goes.
Thank you, Representative Carlson, and if you can state your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Michael Belzer. I'm the medical director of Hennepin County Medical Center. And I wish to inform the committee that the Hennepin County Medical Center is 120 years old this year. You know us very well when the bridge collapses over I-35 and from our Level 1 Trauma Center, which is the state's oldest and largest trauma center, our facilities for burn care, and our 24/7 crisis center, and our commitment to the underserved. But less well known is our very ambitious commitment to education of a variety of health professionals. As Representative Carlson said, what we're looking for is to fund the incremental space required for teaching, as well as a health science education center to help train our medical as well as our non-MD personnel in a number of projects that I'll get to shortly. The request is for $28 million for this education portion of $175 million clinic building. The project consists of two portions. One is the state-of-the-art learning center, which would include an auditorium, classrooms, laboratories, mannequins, and all sorts of new contemporary training devices and techniques for training medical and nursing and EMS personnel. Also, what we're asking for in the second portion is the incremental space involved with teaching clinics in the outpatient building. Since exam rooms and procedure rooms need to be larger to accommodate the trainees, and the teaching experience requires charting stations, conference rooms, call rooms, and so forth. In terms of stating the and framing the issue, as you are well aware, the population of the United States is aging. And if we take a look at the red line on the top of the graph on the screen, we can see the rise in the age of 60-plus-year-olds in the United States and in the state. The yellow line in the middle and the blue line in the middle represent a flat number of graduates from medical school and nursing school. And the line proceeding below the horizontal line is the drop-off of from the workforce of the nursing and MD personnel. 40% of physicians are over the age of 55, and likewise statistics exist for nurses as well. We know that retirement is the number one cause of the demography of a decreasing workforce, and this has the state as well as the nation in great concern about providing the care for the Medicare population as it ages. In terms of our ambitious commitment to medical education, this is just a listing of the health professions that we train. There are over 50 of them. Dental assistants, emergency medical technicians, ultrasonographers, pharmacists, physician assistants. We train nearly 1,000 nurses each year, RNs, LPNs, advanced practice nurses. At any one time, we have 280 residents training on our campus. On any given day, residents are the trainees who are learning a specialty after medical school. At any one time, we have 90 medical students from the University of Minnesota training on our campus. And this past year, in an agreement with Regents Hospital, we are going to be training 9 additional residents in addition to our 280 in programs that help support our health services plan to promote the mission of the institution in terms of psychiatry, internal medicine, primary care, and other specialties. On the right side of this slide, you can see just a small listing of the affiliated institutions that we contract with to train their students in clinical endeavors. For example, Augsburg College has a very distinguished physician assistant program. Those physician assistants need clinical training that they won't get at the campus at Augsburg. They train at Hennepin County Medical Center as well as nurses from many of the other institutions, none of whom pay tuition at Hennepin County Medical Center. We train their students for free, even though those institutions accrue the tuition. We do that as a community service, and it's our hope that we will retain the best and brightest of those training programs. But we have a large number of non-MD health professions that we train, and I'm sure that many of the trainees who are medical as well as non-medical are training and are practicing in your community as well. This is a picture of Pillsbury Auditorium. Pillsbury Auditorium was our premier site and venue for teaching. But because of a constant theme at the medical center, which is clinical expansion needs, we needed to expand our 24/7 psychiatric crisis center, now known as acute psychiatric services, into Pillsbury Auditorium, and we no longer have that site as an educational venue. In our institution, clinical space trumps educational space, but that does put us at a disadvantage in terms of training the new generation of health professionals with the training that they need to be effective. Here's a picture of what we need to do to make up for the loss of Pillsbury Auditorium. This is a cafeteria that's no longer used in the basement. It has about a quarter of as many seats as Pillsbury Auditorium did, poor sight lines, very crowded, and you can see at the back of the cafeteria space where there are people standing in back. It's not a great venue for having large lectures, and in fact, we can't use it for that purpose. On the bottom of this slide is just an example of the incremental space needed for a teaching program. This is Dr. Tom Stillman with 4 residents auscultating the heart of a patient who's given consent for this. And you can see that exam rooms in a clinic building as well as inpatient space needs to be a bit larger to accommodate the training venue. We have a number of potential sites bringing the campus for the outpatient building. We're close in negotiation to purchasing a site, And that would be the area where we would have our educational facility and outpatient building. We're not at liberty to say where it is now since we're in negotiation with the individuals that are at somewhat of a competitive era with the Vikings who are looking to build in the same area around the Metrodome. So the project scope, we can see in the next slide, involves two pieces again. To just remind you, one is the Hennepin Health Sciences Education Center, where we will be training physicians, nurses, physician assistants, EMS, ultrasonographers, radiology techs, and so on. And the other is just the incremental space for teaching clinics for a total of $28 million, which is only educational space out of a $175 million clinic building. So again, in summary, because of aging population of our state and the shrinking supply of health professionals and the fact that Hennepin County Medical Center has an ambitious commitment to all aspects of medical education, we are asking the state to help provide us with teaching facilities in our new outpatient facility.
Thank you, Dr. Felzer. Any questions from the committee? Representative Huntley?
Well, I just have a comment. If you look at the slide 5, go back to that one.
I am stuck here so far.
Well, that's the one that lists all the various health professions that are being trained there and all the institutions that send their students to this facility. And I was once at a range in Duluth MMA meeting. The two medical societies met up there, and I suppose there was 50 docs or more. And I asked how many of you got part of your training at the Hennepin County Medical Center, and more than 75% in that location had spent some of their time either as an undergrad medical student or as a resident there. So it definitely is a teaching institution that is very important to our state.
Agreed. And I also have to point out that St. John's University, a wonderful institution, is a partner. Any questions for the testifier from the committee?
Mr. Chair? I probably forgot to mention that over 65% of our graduates in our MD residency program do stay in the state. And when we looked at our statistics for our 75-plus graduates just from our internal programs last year, that same number was duplicated, so it's somewhere between 60% and 65%, and the great majority of nursing students, physician assistants, and other health professions do stay in the state.
Any further questions? Any final comments? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. Sorry, I missed the beginning of your presentation, but just kind of curious. I can understand why medical facility would be very, very expensive, but can you just sort of give us an idea of, and I apologize if you did this already, but the training facility portion, you know, other than just, you know, the bricks and mortar, what is it about this that makes it?
Well, there's two components. Expensive. Maybe what you're asking about is the Hennepin Health Sciences Education Center. That would be a facility where we would have an auditorium, modular space that would be able to be broken down into different areas for different purposes. The medical and nursing profession is moving towards mannequins for procedures and learning how to start IVs and how to set shoulders and do a number of other our requirements, along with computer-assisted design programs. We also have laboratories where physicians largely learn how to do intubation and suturing. And I guess what I'm saying is compared to when I went to and graduated from medical school in the 70s, the training algorithm to teach learners to be lifelong learners, which is Internet education, since the volume of knowledge has expanded almost infinitely in terms of what's available to physicians now. It just requires a different type of training facility than we would have needed before. And we're losing our training sites because our clinical expansion needs for our programs are constantly eroding that area. The large part of the price is for bricks and mortars, but to be able to do it in the right way.
Thank you. Due to the need of needing to stay on schedule with several other bills before us, I want to thank you for your time, Dr. Belzer, and the committee will be making its recommendations, I believe, on Thursday or tomorrow. Thank you. Also, before we move on to the next bill, I'd like to welcome students from Princeton High School. They are from the 12th grade, and welcome to the Capitol today, and hope you enjoy your time here. We'll move on to House File 3094, Representative Tao.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm going to start out, and then the director, Ms. Fairman, will take over, and then Dr. Majori would like to chime in, too. This is a special bill for her as well. I took a tour on this facility, and, you know, when you walk into a hospital, you know what kind of patients they have, and it was overcrowded. You could tell right away that this facility that maxed out, there's not a lot of money. And the neat part is they have a in-house workshop where they could retrofit or get your wheelchair to fit correctly or build a prosthetic for your leg and what have you. So, Ms. Perryman.
Thank you very much. My name is Margaret Perryman. I'm the CEO at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare in St. Paul, Minnesota. I come today to speak to the committee about funding a planning grant for Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare through the bonding program. Gillette Children's has been providing healthcare services to children with disabilities since 1897. And actually, we were started by the legislature in 1897. In fact, we are the first children's hospital in the United States funded by a state to provide services for children with disabilities. We were a state institution until 1989, and at that time, the state actually spun us off because of the availability of funding through Medicaid. Actually allowed the institution to use Medicaid funds rather than direct grants from the state of Minnesota. So we've been, through those 110 years, we focused on the needs of children with disabilities. As the times have changed, as the children, as the diagnoses have changed, we at Gillette have also changed. On the first page of our handout, we've shown you the communities in which we provide healthcare services, because we not only provide services at our location in St. Paul, but we have a number of clinics that we help hold out in the state. Those clinics could either be a permanent clinic, as in Duluth, we have a permanent clinic. We also have mobile clinics that consists of doctors and other specialists who go out into communities and provide care at a local clinic, at a local hospital, sometimes in a church basement. The next page shows the state of Minnesota broken up in counties, and then how many patient visits we logged in 2007 in each one of those counties. Now, some of those children, many of those cases actually come down to St. Paul for care, but also this includes the children who are cared for in our mobile clinic. Just to help explain Gillette a little bit better and how to differentiate us from the services provided by other hospitals, we have a definition of the number of patients that we've seen in 2007 and the major diagnoses that we care for. And as you look at these major diagnoses, you can see that they're very significantly different than the diagnoses that you might see in local community hospital, Hennepin County Medical Center, University of Minnesota, and the Children's Hospitals of the Twin Cities. So services like brain injury, cleft lip and palate, limb length discrepancy, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, those are the kinds of service or medical diagnoses for which we provide care. One of the questions we've asked ourselves as we've looked at the project that we are presenting, that we're asking for planning money for, is so do we think we're going to continue to grow? Right now we do see quite a bit of chronic conditions, but are we going to continue to grow? And so we've done some work looking at the number of children in the state as determined by the state demographer's numbers, and that's on that next page. The blue line is the Minnesota population of 0 to 19, both up to the year in which this was done, and I think this is 2004, and then projected out for 2015. The red line are the number of patient days we actually logged during that time, and as you can see, even when the blue line was dipping, we continued to see growth. And we expect that our growth line will continue, and then as the blue line continues in a more upward trajectory, it's likely that our numbers will continue to grow as well. The space that we are planning to add, we would like to planning money for, is a pediatric intensive care unit, surgical space, and other expansion necessary to keep up with the growth trends that you see. We are looking to add about 133,000 square feet over the next 4 years, and the money that we're asking for is to help do the planning to identify exactly how what that space would look like, how much space would be allocated to what services. We also list here a master planning facility plan that outlines these in years. By 2009, we will be doing some expansion of our pediatric intensive care unit. We are located on the campus of Regents Hospital, which is a level one trauma center. We provide intensive care services for all pediatric patients who come to the Regents Level 1 Trauma Center. Thus, we need to address the growing the capacity problems that we're beginning to see in our PICU in order to support that Level 1 Trauma Center. And then in 2010, we expect to do surgery expansion and some expansion of our inpatient area. And then we have, just for those of you who like Gantt charts, we have a Gantt chart that shows the dates or how we would align that workout over the next 4 years. And then finally, we have an aerial drawing of the location where the Regents Hospital in Gillette is. And just to show that the space that we expect to add with the project money funding, the planning money that we're asking for, would be on that the red area, the one that's got 183 that's on the north side of University Avenue. We actually own all of that land, and we will be using that land for expansion. And the final page just shows an architectural rendering of what it might look like.
Thank you, Ms. Perryman, and Representative Dorn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. It isn't often that a legislator gets to come and advocate for a facility that they've used for many years, and actually pressuring the chairwoman here about the when are we going to get some more services here, and when are we going to expand some of these clinics, and when are we going to be sure that as a parent of a child with a disability staying overnight that we can get a good night's rest. So it is my pleasure today to come and advocate for this plan and to just give you an idea of what this facility means for parents like myself that have children with chronic long-term disabilities. These are not incidental types of issues that we deal with at this hospital. They're usually ongoing, long-term chronic conditions. Most of the patients are MA eligible. In other words, their children have been diagnosed with a long-term chronic disability, so they're receiving services through private pay, but that doesn't cover most of the costs their MA coverage picks up most of the rest. So the population they serve is very diverse. The facility, though, itself, in responding to needs of parents is second to none. My daughter has had 6 surgeries there. We have had instances where we've utilized their state-of-the-art gait lab, which does what it does is it actually looks at whether or not additional bracing will help children walk, if there's other issues that they can address that way. We also have a wonderful parent support area that parents like myself can go in and get information that we need to be able to advocate not only in the community, but also through our primary care physicians, and then also through the schools. We're very lucky we have a very extensive library we can use. They put a lot of money and resources in being responsible to the community that they serve, and I wholeheartedly support this request and urge you to do the same. And I'd be more than happy, since I've been there so often, that I could actually act as a tour guide if anybody would like to go over and see that.
Thank you. Just to first start off, I'd like to officially call the meeting to order since we have a quorum now. Representative Gottwalt will move the minutes of February 14th.
So moved.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. We'll now move on to questioning. Representative Gottwalt.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Tell, first of all, thank you for the work at Gillette Children's Hospital. It's just it's a fabulous facility and a great asset to the state of Minnesota. Just trying to get an idea of the overall financial picture. We're doing a $500,000 here for planning and design. That's being matched by $500,000 from other sources. But your material here says we're looking at $100 million long term. How much of that's going to be state dollars? How much are you looking for long term from the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, at this time I really can't tell you for certain. We expect to both raise money to support this project, use some of our own reserves to support the project, and then finally request state dollars in addition. I don't have a specific number for you right now, but we certainly will be significantly into this.
Mr. Chair, members, remember this hospital at one time used to be a state a state property or state institution for a long time, and many of these patients who go there do not have any money. So.
If I could, Mr. Chair, that's exactly right, Representative Howe. What we often have is that these patients, it's very difficult for us to find coordinated care for these long-term chronic disabilities patients. What's great at Gillette is that we actually have clinic where we see several doctors at one time so we can actually filter through, get our x-rays, get the things that we need in one visit. That is generally not the way we're treated outside of Gillette Children's, I'll have you know. We often have to go multiple times to different facilities, but at Gillette, all of our service needs are met at this one facility, and it makes it much easier for us to be able to manage the care there. And the doctors actually do a great job of communicating with each other so that there isn't unnecessary tests ordered. They can get access to our records very quickly. All of it is resident. And what's been great, too, is as we talk about medical home model, this hospital truly has begun to implement that. I can store x-rays from any hospital in the state. We work with 2 hospitals, also one in Illinois, where we've brought our records, and Gillette keeps those so that we don't have unnecessary care. This hospital has truly done its best job to deliver care under this medical home model, if you will. So I've been just incredibly pleased and can't say enough about the services we get there.
And we have 2 more questions, then we have to move on to the next bill due to time. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Perryman?
Yes.
I'm, first of all, grateful to Gillette Hospital for saving my grandson Alex's life. He was in a terrible car accident in St. Cloud, Minnesota, when he was 4 years old. He turned 21 this February. He is very brain injured and spent many months at the Gillette Hospital. My husband and I drove back and forth from Faribault weekly, often daily, and just wanted to thank you for all the wonderful work that you do. And also, as you were talking about this, the Gillette Hospital, I remember when it was at, there was one by Lake Phalen. In my younger days, I think I had an aunt that was a nursing assistant there. But the point I want to make is that it is like a state hospital. In fact, it has these outreach clinics that you have, and I have one in Owatonna and down in Steele County, and I was interested, you said that the number of folks are taking care of over 1,200 patients from my district. And that's a lot, and I want that to continue, so thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tao, I see that this picture here, the map, I see we extend your services with Gillette out into Wisconsin. Is there an agreement there with the state of Wisconsin as far as sharing medical with them, or what's the parameters there?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Anderson, we do provide care to children in Wisconsin as well as actually 40 other states in the state of, in the United States. We don't have any particular agreement with Wisconsin, although many, many children who come from Wisconsin are eligible for Wisconsin Medicaid, and we do receive payments through the Medicaid program.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Perriman, and thank you, Representative Tao and Medor. The committee will be taking this under consideration tomorrow.
Thank you.
Next bill is House File 1938, Representative Lamy. Welcome to the committee. Representative Lanny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before you today is House File 1938, and I know that you're not going to move the bill today, but instead consider it a part of your priority package that you submit. I want to call your attention to the need for an amendment changing the date, that the date of the report from DHS is for February 1st of 08, and obviously we've already passed that date, and it should be February 1st of 2009. The bill before you today proposes a better way to house and treat prisoners who are suffering from chemical dependency or mental health concerns. The bill appropriates bond proceeds in the amount of $300,000 and gives that to DHS for the pre-design of a multi-county secured treatment facility, and it further directs the commissioner of DHS to prepare a report assessing the need and viability of the facility. We are asking your consideration for including this in your priority listing. For the last 2 years, we've had 11 counties in west central Minnesota that have been struggling with the need for housing prisoners and meeting their needs for chemical dependency treatment and mental health concerns. They've been spending a lot of time and energy trying to move some kind of cooperative thing forward. I think we as a state should applaud any time counties or local units of government come together to try and solve the problem in a cooperative regional way, and that's what this bill would do for them here today. I've got two folks from our region who can share some more of the details of this request. First, from Otter Tail County, the Sheriff, Brian Schluter, and the County Coordinator from Polk County, Riaz Aziz. They have also supplied you with some handout information that's in your packet. The pre-design process will, we believe, answer questions about the feasibility and the need for this type of facility. And we ask for your consideration in moving this request forward. First, Mr. Chair, I'd like to call on Mr. Aziz to speak on behalf of this county collaborative.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Aziz, and if you can please state your name for the record. And then
thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hosh. I'm Riaz Aziz, representing Polk County, and also as project manager, if you will, for the 11 County Consortium for the West Central Treatment Facility. And thank you again to Representative Lanning for his earlier comments. And the handouts provided for you indicated there were 11 counties that are part of this consortium that came together in 2005. In my neck of the woods, they tell us that if two municipalities can get together and agree on anything, it's quite a remarkable thing. Somebody must have slipped the sea someplace to have 11 counties to actually be able to work on a project for as long as we have, and we're now in the third year of working on this project. And in part because of the enormous impact that chemical dependency takes, the toll that it takes on our communities, and not to mention the state and the federal government as well. This impacts all aspects of county government, if you will, not that includes health and human services, public health, law enforcement, and so forth. And in today's world, when it comes to addressing the needs of chemical dependent inmates of individuals who are chemically dependent on drugs, if you will, the process currently allows for the individual to go through the system quite a bit of time, anywhere between 30, 60, or 120 days, before they are clearly identified as someone who needs the help and has a chemical a need that can be addressed earlier in the program. In visiting with experts, they tell us repeatedly that the earlier we can come in contact with these individuals and the earlier we can identify their needs, the better opportunity we have with respect to trying to address their chemical dependency. As these individuals sit through the process and as they're going through the judicial system, between the 30 to 90 days expiration, if you will, before they go to the hearing process and a sentence, these individuals have already turned a leaf of being dependent on their illicit drug, whether that's alcohol, again, methamphetamine, or what have you. Today, this impact is filling up our jails and programs throughout western Minnesota. We have counties that are, in our last statistic, 15 out of the 16 counties up in the northwestern Minnesota are either planning to build, currently building, or in some form or shape assessing the need for jails because of the heavy impact of the chemical dependence they take on our law enforcement, public health, and human services. We are hoping that at this point that this pre-designed request for funding from the state for $300,000 will enable us to put together a program that will begin to address how we can address the need for taking care of the individuals with a dependent on chemicals, if you will, earlier in the full circle of things, before the 30, 60, or 190 days, 120 days, excuse me, goes to the system, so that those individuals can be dealt with much earlier in the program, so that it both is a cost savings at the local level, at the counties, but also at the state level. And for that, that's the reason for our consideration. And obviously, this impacts law enforcement, and for that reason, we're happy to have the sheriff from Armadale County. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Aziz, and welcome to the committee, Sheriff Schluter. If I pronounce that right, please state your name for the record, too.
I'll go Brian Schluter. I can't hardly say Sheriff Schluter. Mouthful. So thank you for having me. And I came down basically to try to give a snapshot, if you will, of what it looks like in a local jail up in our neck of the woods. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Otter Tail County is home to the most lakes of any county in the United States. So we not only have a large geographic area to cover, but we also have the luxury, I guess, of having a lot of influx from around the state for vacation and take home type people, which brings us problems also. But so we're coming off, like many counties, on the tail end of what was methamphetamine, basically epidemic, I would say, from what we're used to. So those numbers have started to thankfully drop a little bit, but some of those people, because they didn't get treatment, have just shifted on to something else. And the problems that we see still exist in county jails, by statute, are there to house people that are going to be there a year or less. Now, there are some people, because they're there pre-trial and then sends, that actually spend a little longer than that. But that's really the population we deal with. And these are the people that come in that have been caught for something, and usually because of their drug offenses. And just the day before I left, our current population in just our jail, we run 111 bed jail. It's not full right now like it was, but 22% are there for drug related, our drug charges, and many more in there are drug related burglary, that type of things, where they're looking for money to support their habits. So what we see is when people get arrested, like these are the most dangerous, if you will, the most in need people, and they come in and they're at a point in their life where they're vulnerable. And I think they're most acceptable to getting some form of treatment, but we really see three things up there. First of all, they'll come in for a come before the court, and they'll either be released on their own recognizance or with a low bail. They make bail, and they're told to go out with conditions of release. Don't use drugs. Well, these people are there because their life is out of control, and they're told by the court, don't do this. Well, conditions of release, there's not enough probation to really follow that up, and I think it's the case in most counties, and we see it, even if they're found to be violating those conditions of release, they're not brought back into jail, so it doesn't have a lot of impact on these people. So we'll take those people, they come in and they're back out the door, and that very night they're back using drugs because that's all they can do. And we've seen the gamut of rearresting people almost daily to, we had one gentleman where we took $18,000 cash and several ounces of methamphetamine. We just rearrested him for trying to contract a murder on one of the witnesses in the case, and we also bought three more ounces of cocaine this time off him. So those are the people that are right back out there. So there's not a lot of impact up front. Then you got the second group of people that don't make bail, and there's almost a strategy, if you will. They'll sit in jail and actually try to prolong that, hoping they can put some time under their belt and seek a departure when it comes to sentencing. So typically you might get an 86 months in prison, but their attorney will come in and say, Your Honor, my client's already sat in jail for 6 months and so forth, and they're really successful of having that departed to jail time, which they've already served. And again, they have no treatment because there's no court order saying they're just sitting pretrial. And then the last group we see that impacts us are the ones that actually are sentenced. And we're seeing more and more, because of the at the state level jails filling up, they come back to the county to serve a year, which means a third good time off that. And by the time they hit that sentence, they've already sat their time, and that's subtracted from the thing. Again, really no time to have treatment, and they're in and out of there. And so some of the people you want to see the most receive treatment don't get any. And of course, it's ordered afterwards, but it's found, I think, that if it's just recommended, people just don't stick with the program. The follow-up isn't there. And on the conversely, there, drug courts and those specialty courts that we're seeing, where they really ask these people to do unbelievable things, sit in for programs for up to 2 years. You know, they could take their sentence and walk out of there in a lot less time, but they're committed to going, sticking with those programs because they actually want to see some change. So I think the desire is there for some of those people, but the system just doesn't allow them to get that help. And just to add one more thing, I think last year they were looking at changing some of the state sentencing guidelines, which is going to lower the threshold as far as jail time. And with that, you know, they're going to try to replace that with some type of a treatment component. But if it has to be done at the jail level, I speak for a lot of sheriffs in the state. Their jails are full, especially in the security type settings. So they don't have, the jails weren't built as treatment centers. They don't have the staff. They don't have the room to do it. And there's a lot of counties that don't have their own jail. So those are the problems we see on a day-to-day basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers of Representative Lanning, this bill, from what I gather, you're going to be having it under the Department of Corrections, yet you're bringing, according to this diagram from the BKV group, you're asking for treatment staffing, and I'm guessing that's through the Department of Human Services. And I'm not clear on those answers to these questions, and I'm wondering where this is going to be located and who's going to be having control of this. Is it going to be run by the counties or is it going to be run by the state? Because we're closing up several state facilities already, and So I'm just wondering if those questions have been resolved and if BKV has given you... I haven't found the answers to them yet, so...
Well, the answer to those questions, I think, will have to come from the assessment that the Commissioner of Human Services does at the end of this pre-design process. And, you know, I would expect that there's definitely going to have to be some... the counties forming a joint powers agreement of some sort to operate this facility, and obviously if it looks like this is a feasible thing to do in the eyes of DHS, there's going to be a request for additional state funding down the road. But, you know, the answer to those questions really will come, I think, at the end of this process that we're going through on a pre-design. Obviously, corrections needs to be consulted, but because we're focusing on treatment for chemical dependency and mental health issues, DHS is obviously in the best position to make that kind of assessment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, has the Department of Corrections weighed in on this? Have they been consulted with by BKV or yourself?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, yes, in fact, we've been in contact with officials with the Department of Corrections and DHS, primarily because as part of moving forward with the pre-design of the program here, we needed to get some expertise, if you will, with respect to some of the issues that they're facing and how they would go ahead and respond to the issues of trying to treat these folks before they're sentenced, if you will. And that brings an interesting element into the DOC's play into it. And that's the reason we've contacted officials within DOC and DHS, and they have actually made officials within those two agencies available to us to serve on the committee, which will be assisting us with the pre-design.
Well, Mr. Chair, just as a kind of a broad spectrum view, I had a conversation with my local county sheriff in Wright County and with the local hospital and local sheriff out of Buffalo, and they're experiencing the same kind of problem that these counties, and I think this is just a small smidgen of what's happening throughout the state. We're closing up state regional run outfits, and then we're expecting law enforcement and human services to find places to put these people, and there's no answer to this. And that's why I'm trying to get a handle on where this is going, and because I think other people are going to want answers to this as to where are the beds, how do we deal with methamphetamine type lawbreakers and others who break the law, but they've been classified by the health department or health officials as being chemically and mentally unstable. And so we're kind of a catch-22, and there's a lot of things that I don't understand why we're closing those state facilities up when we're looking for another way to have to come up with an answer to this situation.
Mr. Chairman, if I might...
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Wen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might just respond to that by saying that perhaps this should be almost considered a pilot to see if this pre-design proves to be feasible, and maybe it could be replicated in other parts of the state that are experiencing the same kind of problems we're facing in west central Minnesota.
Thank you. One last question, then we have to get moving on. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Lanning, I think you've identified a need. I'm not quite sure if I quite understand. The pre-design is going to address the annual operating costs of $2.5 million, but it's not been determined who's going to pick those up. And it feels a little like build it and the money will come. But so you can clarify that to me, because it's not clear. I mean, even the facility ownership is not clear. So if you could help with that. And the other thing I'd like you to address, and perhaps this is for the sheriff, is whether or not you've talked to your district court and whether you think they will make the kind of changes that you're hoping for, which is not to allow people out on bail, to, I don't know if they even legally can order people to treatment before they've been found guilty. So it feels like it's going to take some, you know, some legal system changes to implement your model, but I'm not an expert on the court. So if you could just address whether it really will take an ability to commit people to get the beds filled, and then the operational costs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can take a stab at the first part of the question, it seems to me that the pre-design and the process we go through in making this study will help outline, is it feasible to do this kind of treatment on a regional basis, and what might be the cost to implement this strategy, both operationally as well as physical capital costs. And then, obviously, the question is going to become one of what are the local communities able and willing to do, and what gap might be left for the state or federal government to provide additional support. I don't think any of us go into this thinking that all those questions are predetermined. It seems to me we're going to have to see whether it's feasible, treatment-wise and operationally, and then make those determinations at a later date.
Mr. Aziz.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, to echo Representative Lanning's comment, part of the reason for doing the pre-design and part of the reason for getting the number of experts that we've reached out to as part of this project is to answer the very same questions. The 11 counties that have come together so far have made a two-year investment both in terms of staff time and putting in $75,000 of their own money, the county's dollars, if you will, in terms of trying to determine what is the need. We've done a number of surveys, if you will, based on the prisoners that were held at a moment in time. We are trying to assess in the long term, can a facility like this in the regional work? We are obviously looking possibly at Fergus Falls, Otter Tail County as being one of the possible locations for it because it's regionally situated. And it's also going to be addressing a number of questions such as exactly who was going to own and operate the facility. What type of population do we intend to serve? And to go back to the representative's point earlier with respect to the judicial system, you're quite accurate, and that is that there is a difference between those individuals who are sentenced and therefore ordered by the court system to indeed go to treatment, if you will, versus those who are currently being held. And that's one of the key components, is when you're holding somebody and their life is literally coming apart at that moment. They've been arrested for some drug possession, if you will. There's a potential for their jobs. There's a potential for impact in terms of their family, socioeconomic impact, their embarrassment, all of that. And the question is, can we target those individuals at that moment with the professionals, the psychologists, the therapists, those who can assess these individuals and make their calls? And all of this is part of that pre-designed concept to help us determine whether or not that is feasible and what it will take to operate to own the facility. And on page 3 of the handout that was provided for you, there is a list of bullet items that is listed out with regards to what the pre-design requirement is intended to flush out in the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aziz. Due to time, we do need to get moving forward with other bills, but thank you for the time you've given the committee, and we will consider this request tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next bill for consideration is House File 2581, Representative Howes. Welcome to the committee, Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I know you're just laying these over, but you'll see that the bond request is blank. We finally have a number. Working with admin and human services, that number is $400,000. So if you'd like to amend the bill and put that in or leave it blank, that would be whatever the committee wants to do.
We can amend the bill with the number at this time. Amendment we'll consider
okay.
It tomorrow officially. But Representative Slawick will move to insert $400,000 in line 1.16. All in favor, signify by
aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I've been in office for 10 years, fortunate enough to be elected a few times. And since day one, I've worked on this issue, and I'll only mention the word Agua Ching once today. And I've gone through four senators and myself working on this project for many years, trying to get the state not to vacate the city of Walker and leave, because it's the only state-operated nursing home in Minnesota. It had $11 million payroll, 300-some jobs, but unfortunately we were not able to save that. Over the course of the last 3 to 4 years, we passed a bonding bill for $4 million to do demolition and reuse at the facility site. The Department of Human Services, during the last 3 to 4 years, has not given us a date when they're going to leave the facility. Letters being handed out to you now that finally gave us a date. We can finally now send out bids for what the demolition is going to cost. We know, and so does the Department of Human Services, they have agreed that it will cost $400,000 more than what was estimated 3 to 4 years ago. We want to transfer the property in April or May. Cass County and the City of Walker, because of the population size and the enormity of the project, can't sign the land transfer until all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, and they simply can't afford the $400,000. Also, there'll be a letter in there from Senator Coleman showing that Washington has given their basic approval on the critical access hospital at that site, so that will be a tremendous help. The Benedictine is still committed to building a hospital, long-term care facility, assisted living, etc., at the site, create over 200 jobs, maybe 300 jobs when they're done. The county courthouse will be moving out there, a new one, next year. So everything looks on the upswing, everything looks good, and hopefully, again, like I say, members, Mr. Chairman, this is the last time I will have to ever come before this committee to deal with this issue. And I'd appreciate your support, and send it to Chair Hausman so we can finalize this and work it out.
Thank you, Representative Hodge.
I'm not
Representative Hodge. I tell you, between all the Larrys and the H's in our names, I can barely pronounce my name sometimes. So. Representative Abler, yes. Yeah.
Thanks, Representative Hodge. I'm glad to hear you. I can't help myself. Somehow we're classmates. We came in together. I've heard nothing about everything except Agua Ching from you since then. And the bill that we did 4 years ago, that would have been the last bill except for the fact that inflation happened. So when you said that was the last bill, you really meant it, I know. So I think we should do this deal, members.
Thank you very much.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, how much was the building... The word that you didn't want to say. How much was that, as far as selling it to Cass County?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, Cass County will get it with no charge. It will be the buildings will be demolished. The most of the underground infrastructure will be removed, but not all of it. The admin and human services and the county have agreed to a certain extent, and that's why they've agreed to the $400,000. The caveat there is if the county were to ever transfer that or sell it to a private entity, the money, the value or whatever it is at that time phrase value, that money would go directly to the state of Minnesota. So I hope that answers your question.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the bonding that you're asking for here, is that going to the county?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the county will facilitate the demolition under the guidance of the state. The state will not cut a check to the contractor or contractors that do this until it's done, and the state will have to approve anything that Cass County signs a contract for. I mean, the money will not actually, I believe, a check will not be cut to Cass County. It will go directly to whoever is doing the work under the guidance of Cass County.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Representative Howard?
Is it before?
Well, thank you, Representative Howard. We're also able to get back on schedule, so we
thank
appreciate
you, Representative
Hosh.
Thank you, members.
House File 2458, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have Mr. Hawes here helping out with the.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today to present again House File 2458. I don't know if it should be moved before continuing. So.
We're not officially moving the bills until tomorrow.
Okay.
We'll consider them tomorrow for rain.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is a request, a bonding request for $6 million for a treatment facility to serve the youth of the White Earth Nation and other tribes in the area up around Bemidji. It's believed that incorporating the cultural and spiritual components of a treatment program will be the most effective intervention for problems that youth are experiencing up there. It is a facility that's already existing that they're looking to purchase, that the White Earth Nation is looking to purchase. It would, it's the Gilfillan Center, Gilfillan Center is has been a treatment center for 40 years, owned by the Episcopal Church. They are now selling it. And it's a perfect facility to meet the needs of the White Earth Nation and the other Native American youth in that area. It's centrally located in Bemidji, between a lot of the tribal communities. So it's a good location in that regard. And it's a 40-acre piece of property. $6 million is what it would cost to purchase it. It would be a good investment in that once it's purchased, it's the cost of maintaining and running it is going to be fully covered. We'll be getting federal money to operate the facilities. There's also going to be outside money coming in for the renovation that's required in this project as well. So it's really a good deal for the state of Minnesota. And I have with me today, I'm honored to have with me the chair of the White Earth Nation, Irma Visner, who is going to give further details on this project. So, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Representative Egan, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Irma Visner, and I'm the tribal chairwoman of the White Earth Nation, located in northern Minnesota. First of all, I would like to thank this committee and Representative Deacon, and for the $50,000 that was appropriated to White Earth last year for the pre-design and the feasibility study that you have before you at this time. The tribe has completed all of the requirements for the feasibility studies. Have focused on the facility, 40-acre facility owned by the Episcopal Church in Bemidji, known as the Gilfillan Center, which served was a youth treatment, mental health and chemical treatment center for 40 years. I just wanted to say, before I go through very briefly the information in the packet before you, that White Earth is ready at this time to serve Native American youth who are disproportionately represented in the juvenile correctional system at a rate that is, I'd say, alarming. Department of Corrections has informed the tribe and other tribes that up to 47% of the juveniles in the juvenile correctional system are Native American youth. And yet we as Native Americans represent 2% of the population in Minnesota. We're losing our future, and we're not only losing our future, but we're creating a system that's been a cycle for generations at this point. And we are here, at least I'm here, to break that cycle. We believe by incorporating the cultural and the spiritual components of Ojibwe, Lakota, Native American culture, that we will be able to better treat and more effectively treat our youth. Those components, and with culture, I'm talking about the family, our elders, and all of the support systems that we have within our tribe that are not being currently used. And service to our youth who are going through the juvenile correctional system at this time, and have been going through this. This is an issue that I don't like to say it because I'm just as responsible as anyone else. This is a problem that should have been looked at 20 years ago, at least. The goal is to is to focus on the historical context of our culture, the strong family connections, the coordination with the school curriculum on the reservations, to give appropriate diagnostics and assessments, and to incorporate our families and our tribal elders in the treatment process. At this time, because we can't be all things to all juveniles who have the need, we intend to focus on ages 14 to 16 years of age, males and females, court-ordered placements, also voluntary placements by family working with case managers. That we will incorporate the family participation for those juveniles coaching release and provide the aftercare services for juveniles released from the facility, which will be developed in cooperation with probation and social services. Those younger than 12 years old would be addressed through the community and family programs, and those from 16 to 18 may be addressed as resources allowed to focus on the violators of the tribal truancy program rather than juveniles with other offense records. The percentage of juveniles, of our tribal juveniles in the correctional system are there, I'd say 95% are there because of chemical, alcohol problems, and these lead into other offenses. So treatment is our focus, along with mental health services. The facility is located, centrally located in the Bemidji area, within the city limits of Bemidji, actually, ideally located to serve the three largest tribes in Minnesota. Now, Gilt Ellen Center was opened 40 years ago and was a very, 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 very good program. It ran into its difficulties and closed last June, financial difficulties, and closed last June. And people have asked me, and it's a justified question, how's the tribe going to run this facility when Gilt Ellen wasn't able to do it? Well, I'll tell you, the Gilt Ellen Center and other county-run programs receive reimbursement at 50% through the state. When the tribe owns this facility, we are eligible to access Title IV Part E, I believe it is, funds through the federal government at 100%. And we would certainly be cost-effective and be able to develop more programs that will serve our youth. We realize that this is just the beginning, and it would be able to develop as we have our start. This would be the first such facility in the state, I believe, to address on a comprehensive level the needs that are out there. The facility would house up to 71. It has a school that has a capacity for 80 students. Currently, at the present time, leased by the Bemidji School District for an alternative program. I have met with the Bemidji School Superintendent, and we, as a tribe, would continue that relationship. The facility has 5 well-maintained dorms designed as homes. The facility also has an athletic field and a swimming pool, administrative and support buildings. The assessed property on the tax rolls at this time is $4,500. $4,500,000. In talking with the Episcopal Church, we have been assured that the total cost would not be more than $6 million. We are yet waiting for an appraisal just very shortly. Let's see. As I said before, the tribe is prepared right now to start serving our youth. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Visner.
Yep.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, Chairman Visner, to our committee and for bringing forth, I know, a project that is much needed. What I'm wondering is, I know you're going to work in consultation with state agencies, but are you going to be under the same regulations and accountability that we hold to our regular care and treatment facilities?
Representative Erickson and members of the committee, yes, we have a team working with the Department of Human Services on the licensing, programming. We have been working through for a number of months now to meet all the criteria that any state facility has. I think on our summary, and I didn't go through the summary, but we have a team from the Department of Human Services on the licensing and programming. So yes, we would meet all that criteria.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Visner, will you have compliance as far as our regular care and treatment centers that are not under sovereign government abide by the smoking and tobacco product regulations that we have at our care and treatment centers?
Representative Erickson, members of the committee, absolutely.
Thank you. And finally, will you try to fill? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will you try to fill this care and treatment facility with members of your tribe before you open it up to others? I know the need is great, so you probably could, but I'm just wondering, how extensive you will go looking for residents.
Ms. Visner.
Thank you very much. We will serve all Native American youth, and we will open it also up to those youth who are not Native American as well. But obviously, our priority will be the Native American youth.
So, Mr. Chair, that means that this facility would be open to other young people in need of between 14 and 16, I guess it is, that you prefer?
12 to 16 years.
That's good, but I'm glad that you're going to concentrate on helping your own youth first. Thank you.
We have also a resolution passed by the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, which comprises the six tribes, White Earth, Sleep Lake, Boys Fort, Mille Lacs, Grand Portage, and
we do have the resolution in front of us, Ms. Visner.
So we do have support from the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe for White Earth to pursue this facility and the services for tribal youth.
Are there any additional questions for the testifiers in the committee? With none, I want to thank the testifiers for providing their time to us today. And Representative Eakin, any final thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's if you look at the cost of what it would take to actually construct such a facility, this is a really good deal to buy an already existing facility. And timing just happened to be just right that this opportunity arose at this time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and the committee will take this under consideration tomorrow. Thank you. That said, no further business. The committee is adjourned.